This is Encounter on VOA. Here's Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America. On this edition of the program, South America's largest and most powerful country holds a critical presidential election on October 28. What's at stake for Brazil and Latin America? Hello again, I'm Carol Castiel. Brazil's general election has deeply divided the country, with two candidates representing opposing visions for the future. 63-year-old former army captain Jair Bolsonaro, a right-wing populist affiliated with the Social Liberal Party, won 46% of the vote in the first round. In the October 28 runoff, Bolsonaro will face Fernando Haddad of the left-wing Workers' Party, who was handpicked by jailed former president Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva. Haddad won only 29% of the vote in the first round, which leaves him entering the second round almost 17 percentage points behind. Despite Jair Bolsonaro's record of misogyny, homophobia, racism, and even admiration of dictators, polls reveal Bolsonaro continues to be the favorite to become Brazil's next president. Much of his support derives from, quote, antipetismo, or a vote against the Workers' Party, or PT, during the early years when PT, when President Lula da Silva, governed Brazil from 2003 to 2016, the economy grew and poverty fell. However, the presidency of his successor, Dilma Rousseff, which began in 2011, was a disaster. Her mismanagement of the economy helped cause Brazil's worst ever recession. Corruption on a massive scale came to light through what is known as Lava Jato, or Operation Car Wash. She was subsequently impeached on unrelated charges, and Lula is serving a jail sentence for corruption. So many voters are turning to Bolsonaro, who promises to be tough on crime and revamp the economy and government. He also plays to the nostalgia of older voters who remember two decades of military dictatorship from 1964 to 1985 as a time of law and order and a booming economy. However, while millions of Brazilians do support him, many experts are fearful of the threat Bolsonaro poses to the nation's young democracy. Well, joining us to preview Brazil's runoff election are Paulo Solteiro. He's director of the Brazil Institute at the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars. Paulo is also an award-winning journalist. He served as the Washington correspondent for Estado de São Paulo from 1989 to 2006. And James Roberts. He's research fellow for economic freedom and growth at the Heritage Foundation. And before joining Heritage in 2007, James served as a foreign service officer. He completed tours of duty at U.S. embassies in Mexico, Portugal, France, Panama, and Haiti. And both gentlemen join me here at the VOA Broadcast Center in Washington. Bem-vindo. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Carol.
Muito obrigado.
Paulo Solteiro, let me begin with you. How did we get here? In other words, we have a very populist candidate, Jair Bolsonaro, someone that we probably wouldn't have expected, except for the fact that we're seeing sort of a trend of populism throughout the world, in Europe and here, even in the United States, with the election of Donald Trump. But give us a sense of what factors led us to the current choice that we have.
Carol, the first you already mentioned is the longest and deepest recession in Brazil's history, from 15 to 17. The lingering effects are still with us. The investigations that took place in Brazil of corruption, which is in itself a good thing that Brazil is going after corruption. This is a sign of vitality of Brazilian democracy. But what was revealed was pretty sad. The Workers' Party, an associated party, an associated businessman, formed basically a sort of a mafia to assault public companies in Brazil, Petrobras, especially the oil company. So all of this, recession, lack of ethics, self-serving political class in Brazil that has not renewed itself and has developed rules to keep things as is, have frustrated enormously the electorate, giving Mr. Bolsonaro, backbencher in his, 27 years in Congress, an opportunity to put together an insurgent campaign, which he did, I think, stealing a page from President Donald Trump's playbook. He relied on social media, Facebook, WhatsApp, was successful in the first round, is likely to be elected by, difficult to talk about numbers, but I believe that he will get around 55% of the vote. And then we'll have the very difficult task of managing a very heterogeneous coalition and proving that he, an untested leader who never run anything in terms of executive power, to prove that he is up to the job of governing a very complex Brazilian reality, a country that really needs to renew itself. I believe personally that Brazil is capable of doing that in democracy, and this is the challenge.
So turning to you, James Roberts, for your take on how we got here. No question there's this frustration, disgust with the PT, the Workers' Party of Lula. Fernando Haddad comes in on a back foot. Obviously, even if he's a decent guy, he's far behind. But what about the center? Why Bolsonaro, and where are the successors of Fernando Henrique Cardoso, for example? I mean, again, please give us your take on how we got here and where other candidates who would be perhaps more likely to govern with greater experience for such a heterogeneous country, as Paulo says.
Yeah, well, Paulo, as Paulo mentioned, the entire political class on both sides of the spectrum generally have been tainted by corruption, and Bolsonaro wasn't. I mean, I would trace it not just back to the terrible recession, but back to really the end of Lula's first term. When Lula, in his first term, maintained the reforms that Cardoso had put in place that helped Brazil. It maintained the bond rating, the stability, the fighting inflation. But then you started to see opening up the floodgates of spending, using the state-owned banks in ways that were not transparent. And so people have been, I think, getting more and more frustrated, it seems to me. You have, very interestingly, a very big surge in evangelicals in Brazil. At least, I think maybe Paula would know better, but about a third, I think, of the people now are evangelicals, Pentecostals. You have Bolsonaro professing to be very devoutly Christian teachings on the social areas, which there has been a rejection, I think, of some of the social mores of the left here. And so there are a lot of things going on here that I think reflect in the support for someone coming in from the outside, someone very much like a Trump, really, and saying, look, this isn't working. We have massive problems. We have these state-owned companies that have become dens of corruption, and I'm going to clean it up, and I'm going to maybe use some of my former comrades, colleagues in the military to help, not in the sense of bringing back a dictatorship, but in the sense of giving people confidence they're going to restore some order to the country.
So Paulo Sotero, can Bolsonaro restore order to the country? Does he have a plan to reduce the bloat in the federal government, the regulations, taxes, and corruption? And then how do you reconcile that with his attitudes, which have been objectively characterized as homophobic, racist, he's anti-women. We've seen marches, ele não, not him, in Portuguese, by many women coming out against him because of his sexist attitudes.
Institutionally, there is nothing out of order in Brazil. Brazil follows the institution that we put together in a constitution that has just completed 30 years. It is the use of those institutions by civilians, not by the military, by the way. The military in Brazil are very much respected by society these days. The military in Brazil don't want anything to do with governing Brazil, but they have prestige, and Mr. Bolsonaro will certainly use some of retired generals who are civilians now, like much you have in the United States, some retired generals serving the government. His challenge is enormous. He obviously comes with, I believe, political capital. It's not clear what he's going to do with that capital. His principal economic advisor, a very liberal economist from Chicago University, Paulo Guedes, has proposed that Brazil really opens up. Brazil is the most closed economy among the middle-income economies, needs air to breathe, to grow. In contrast, there are people surrounding Mr. Bolsonaro and the retired generals, for instance, that had a less optimistic view on that. They come from a tradition that is a Brazilian tradition of statism, Mr. Bolsonaro has already announced that he will not privatize companies like Petrobras, like Eletrobras. Those are giant major companies. As far as what you call the cultural issues, he has been seen as a misogynist. He was an apologist of rape, of human rights violations, etc. He was. He has already moderated his positions in those because he knows that one, although he may generate some support among the fringes, the extreme right, for instance, most Brazilians are not in the extreme right or the extreme left. They are at the center. And they will elect Mr. Bolsonaro, one, because of the rejection of what came before. It's not as much as an affirmative vote as it was a reaction to what came before. And what they really expect from Mr. Bolsonaro, yes, law and order in terms of reducing the problem of public safety in Brazil. Brazil has, of the 50 most violent cities in the world, 17 now are in Brazil. The 63,000 people dying every year of homicides. Now, he will be establishing some law and order there, but at the same time, he will be judged principally by his capacity to get the Brazilian economy back on track, growing sustainably, creating jobs. We lost some 12 million, 13 million jobs in this recent recession. So that is what he will have to focus on. It's uncertain, unclear how he's going to do that because those issues have not been very much debated during the campaign, which is a pity, not by him, by all the candidates. There are very little substance during the campaign. It was really a divisive type of episode, but he will have to set some guidelines and delegate. Let's see if his economics advisor, becoming probably the finance minister, will have the capacity to negotiate, win Congress. Nothing will happen in Brazil outside of Congress. There are some administrative measures Bolsonaro could take to open up trade a bit. But the game starts on January 1st, and it is expected to be a very complex one.
I will turn to James for his take on that after a short break. You're listening to Encounter on the Voice of America. My guests are Paulo Solteiro, from whom you just heard. He's director of the Brazil Institute at the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars, and James Roberts, research fellow for economic freedom and growth at the Heritage Foundation. And we're discussing Brazil's upcoming runoff election on October 28. And this is a reminder that our Encounter podcast is available at our website at voanews.com/encounter. You may also follow us on Twitter at Carol Castiel, VOA, or connect with us on Facebook. Well, here's a shout out to a Facebook fan, Yashal Kohan from Lahore, Pakistan. If you want to hear your name on the air, please send us an email to encounter@voanews.com or like us and leave a comment on our Facebook page. Well, back to our discussion about the upcoming runoff election in Brazil. And now to you, James Roberts, for your take on how Bolsonaro will actually govern if elected, you know, given the divisiveness in the society and the fact that it really is an election sort of against PT, not as much perhaps for him per se. And then how do you address the cultural issues and his language and sentiments vis-a-vis women, vis-a-vis Brazilians of color? He's used some very derogatory language, even though we see some support among mixed-race Brazilians for him.
Well, unfortunately, he was almost killed during the campaign. He was almost assassinated by a knife attack and has been recovering. He lost 40% of his blood. And in fact, his credentials as an evangelical-leaning Christian show, you know, include very strong support for Israel. And so there were millions of prayers going up in Brazil for his recovery, and he was tweeting about it every day. And so I agree, it would have been preferable to have a full-throated debate about the way forward economically when he takes office, which he clearly will. But his finance minister in waiting, Geddes, has said that he is open to privatizing a great deal. And where are they going to get the money? And they need money. So much was squandered and stolen in the last 10 years. So many bridges and highways were built at inflated prices with kickbacks, and highways and roads that aren't even being used that were connected to the World Cup and Olympics, corruption that has been exposed along with other corruption scandals. So they're going to have to privatize. They could even privatize some of the subsidiaries of Petrobras and other companies, bring in money, bring in investment. After all, what we do at the Heritage Foundation, our annual Index of Economic Freedom, is really a study of the investment climate of countries around the world. And our results for Brazil have been very disheartening in the last 10 years. Down below in the level of not even any economic freedom, especially they have problems with government integrity, as we've seen, but also they have a huge amount of debt. They can't borrow more. They have one of the lowest scores on our fiscal health indicator of any country in the world. So it's clear to me that he is going to, I think, have a welcome mat at the White House, because it is very much in the character of President Trump, this kind of campaign coming out, kind of riding in to save the day. When I've been in Brazil, I've always been struck by how much they are like Americans in Brazil. And of course, they have sort of the mentality of bigness. They have this huge land, bigger than the continental United States, and a tremendous potential. And so I think that there's going to be an optimism. I think this is a real game changer, just like we've seen under President Trump, a tremendous economic recovery, the stock market going up, and other signs of real confidence in the future. And so I think that that's going to be the case. That's my prediction under a Bolsonaro presidency.
Back to you, Paulo Sotero. James Roberts paints a cautiously optimistic picture of potential economic reform. But let's play the devil's advocate a little bit. Let's look at other potential downsides of a Bolsonaro victory, looking at how he proposes to combat crime. He talks about sending heavily armed security forces into these largely black and mixed race slums. I mean, is that really the answer? More violence, more of a militarized approach? And then what about the environment? Some who are worried about deforestation are worried about a continuing trend in that regard. Once viewed as more of a vanguard in terms of protecting the environment, Brazil is going backwards, and he may want to accelerate that trend. What about those two points?
It's important on the public safety area to separate two things. When you say the militarized, Brazil has military police that is actually the new name for old police force. The military have participated in some of those operations when requested. There were 17 instances in which, in the past many years, that those things were requested from the military. They did it. They don't like it one bit.
Right. That's a linguistic thing. I meant to say militarized as a descriptive. In other words, he proposes to send heavily armed security forces, not the military, but increasingly arming these police forces.
Yeah, to do that, you have to negotiate with the governors, who are the commanders of those forces. And what strikes me as really surprising is that there isn't much of a plan to do those things. Those are difficult issues. These gangs, a lot of them related to drugs, are in slums that are very densely populated, difficult to penetrate. So he could have difficulties delivering that. That obviously could also expose the people participating to accusations of human rights abuses, with obviously the impact that we can imagine. Another issue that you mentioned, environment. It's very important. Mr. Bolsonaro said at some point in the campaign that he would maybe follow President Trump's example and withdraw from the Paris Climate Agreement. That would be a problematic thing for him to do, because there would be strong reaction by protectionist groups in Europe that would probably punish Brazil by imposing tariffs and some sort of punishment. I think the agribusiness in Brazil that support Mr. Bolsonaro very much would have second thoughts about pursuing that route. The same regarding, by the way, the idea of moving the embassy, the Brazilian embassy in Israel, to Jerusalem. That is likely to cause reactions from the very large Arab community that we have in Brazil, some 12 to 13 million people, and boycott of Brazilian meat by Muslim countries. So it's not that easy to implement those things. It will depend on how Mr. Bolsonaro defines his mandate. He has ample room to do that, and what battles he picks, and in what sequence.
Your take on that, James Roberts, some of the potential drawbacks to your more rosier prediction, whether it's regarding the environment or increasingly using security forces to combat violence, to what extent that could actually backfire?
Well, I would just say that if Bolsonaro is successful in jump-starting the economy of Brazil, and I think he will be because the United States economy is booming, what better country for President Trump to do a free trade agreement with than Brazil at this point and an investment agreement? And if these poor people in these favelas start to get real jobs and not just government handouts and are able to leave, they're not like frozen in time in these terrible places. They should be able to move up and get upwardly mobile. That could solve some of these problems. I was in Manaus in the state of Amazonas in August. It's hard to imagine without being there just to describe just how enormous that area is. I mean, it's bigger than the entire U.S. East Coast, just that one state. There are, of course, concerns about environmental protection, but there are also potentials for opening up some of that land to develop in ways that are going to create jobs and prosperity for the country. I don't think that Bolsonaro would enter into that kind of debate immediately, but I think eventually he would want to engage publicly. Just as Paula was saying, that lamentably we didn't have in advance of the election a full discussion of some of these issues, but these are complex issues. They're not easily solved, but they also have a lot of potential upsides to look at. We can also talk.
Well, we don't have much time, so as we close, I'm going to give you both an opportunity to say whatever you want, but if you might want to address the implication for the region, Paulo, should Bolsonaro win, which he's likely to do, what the implication is for Latin America, and how about those U.S.-Brazilian relations?
I believe U.S.-Brazilian relations will have an opportunity for engagement. For instance, there is a pending deal between Boeing and Embraer, the largest builder of airplanes in Brazil, that could be very complementary, very positive, would be what my dear friend, former Ambassador Luigi Einaudi, once described as a strategic engagement. It remains to be seen whether that deal will go forward. It's pretty mature. It has been negotiated, could be approved by the current president, and let's see how Mr. Bolsonaro uses that opportunity. The details are important here. He could liberalize the Brazilian economy without having to negotiate with any country by simply adopting certain administrative measures that have been identified and proposed by the current government through the Chamber of Foreign Trade in Brazil called CAMEX. It's easy to do. Brazil needs those measures in order to attract more capital, productive capital that wants to be in Brazil.
So you get the last word, James, on any other issues you want to address, particularly as the election of Bolsonaro, should that come to pass, affect Latin America in general and U.S.-Brazilian relations?
Well, clearly, just as Airbus wants to buy Bombardier in Canada, it's a match made in heaven for Boeing to buy Embraer. I think that I would be hopeful about that. We're watching a swing back to the right side throughout Latin America, especially South America. You have Piñera back in power in Chile. You've got Duque elected, an acolyte of Uribe in Colombia. You have even Moreno, the successor to Correa, has been shifting back to the middle. Macri, clearly, in Argentina, is trying to survive to be the first non-Peronist president ever to survive a four-year term in Argentina. We hope that that is the case. All of these countries, with a revitalized Brazil, can confront the immense suffering and the horrible government in Venezuela and take action regionally that the United States can't do. That would be great for the continent. It would be certainly great for the people in Venezuela who are suffering under that Maduro dictatorship. I am optimistic. I think that we're going to be maybe coming back to this table in a few months, and we're going to have a good story to tell.
I hope so, and I hope you will join us again, and we'll provide coverage of the elections in Brazil for our audience in the days to come. I'm afraid that's all the time we have on this edition of Encounter. I'd like to thank my guest, Paulo Sotero. He's director of the Brazil Institute at the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars, and James Roberts, research fellow for economic freedom and growth at the Heritage Foundation. Gentlemen, thanks again. Obrigada for sharing your terrific insights.
A pleasure being with you.
Nice to be here.
Encounter was produced in Washington. Our engineer was Cornelius Tenor. And I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Encounter on the Voice of America.